Without the ones like you, who work tirelessly to keep things running, everything would suddenly stop. Hospitals, factories, schools, and power plants, they all depend on you. No matter the weather, emergency, or time of day, you're the ones who get it done. At Grainger, we're here for you, with professional-grade industrial supplies. Count on real-time product availability and fast delivery. Call, clickgrainger.com or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
Prescription products require completion of an online medication consultation with an independent healthcare provider through the LifeMD platform and are only available if prescribed. Subscription required. Individual results may vary. Additional restrictions apply. Read all warnings before using GLP-1s. Side effects may include a risk of thyroid C-cell tumors. Do not use GLP-1s if you or your family have a history of thyroid cancer.
If you've struggled for years to lose weight and have given up hope, did you know you can now access GLP-1 prescription medications at TryLifeMD.com? We're now offering eligible patients online access to GLP-1s, the breakthrough prescription medication that can help you lose body fat and weight. Listen to what people are saying.
It's fun to put on jeans that you couldn't get into 6 months ago.
Every morning, I look forward to getting on the scale.
For anybody who's struggling with their weight, it's a godsend.
And here's the best part. Your insurance may cover 100% of the cost of your medication. So go to TryLifeMD.com to have your eligibility checked right now. Get started today at TryLifeMD.com. That's TryLifeMD.com.
Welcome to the Edge of Sports podcast. I'm Dave Zirin. This week we are talking to two-time Emmy-nominated producer and director and a former Friends Seminary starting point guard. His recent credits include Free Meek, we're going to talk to him about that, and Show Out, which is executive produced by LeBron James. It's coming out in early 2023. But what we're going to talk to him about primarily is that he is putting forward an expose about brain injuries and the NFL for Al Jazeera English. It's amazing. It's called Blood Sports, and his name is Isaac Solitaroff. Isaac, how you doing? Welcome to the Edge of Sports podcast.
Good, Dave. How are you?
I'm doing well. Congratulations on Bloodsport, man. It's
very
powerful.
Thank you so much.
I mean, first and foremost, Isaac, it's great to talk to you. Thanks so much for coming on the podcast.
My pleasure.
Yeah, let's just run through very quickly some of your recent credits, just because I think they might intrigue people. If you could just give a thumbnail, what was Free Meek about?
So Meek Mill was a documentary series about the rapper activist Meek Mill, who was wrongfully convicted of pulling a gun on a police officer, which if you're a black man in Philadelphia, everyone knows that a black man that pulled a gun on a police officer does not live to tell the tale. But Meek not only lived to tell the tale, but was imprisoned for it and then on probation for it for 10-11 years. And what we were able to do was find a whistleblower officer who said that Meek was set up, that Meek in fact did not pull a gun on a police officer, and that this was actually a staged robbery by this narcotics unit in Philadelphia. So we were basically able to marry the true crime genre with the sort of celebrity of Meek Mill, and do a five-part series about the criminal justice system, which, you know, Meek has really been a champion of since he got out of prison. Yeah.
Yeah, reforming it. Absolutely. And real quick, what Show Out? You know, very intriguing, executive produced by LeBron James, coming out in early 2023. Tell us what Show Out's about.
Dave, as a fellow New Yorker, I think you'll love this story. There is a whole underworld of street football in New York. These were leagues that started in the 70s and 80s, sort of at the high, as crack made its way into this underground economy. And so it started out kind of like NASCAR did. You know, its roots are in bootlegging. The origins of these underground street football leagues are in sort of dark money, drug money economies in inner city New York. And these guys form football teams, not all that different from what happened at Rucker, you know, like these where they had basketball teams. These were football teams that would play each other for, you know, pretty high stakes. And it continues to this day, although it's kind of moved beyond its origins. And we assembled the best street football teams from across New York, and then actually invited teams from Philadelphia and Baltimore as well to play what we call the street ball and crown the best street football team in America. So this is a series I did in 2015 for Vice, and then LeBron and Spring Hill and Uninterrupted came on, and we did it as a more sort of developed series in the last year.
Fantastic. So
thank you.
Going to Bloodsport, the issues of concussions, race norming, the National Football League are issues that we've dealt with on this show quite a bit. So feel free to pitch this at a high level for us.
Great.
Tell us about Bloodsport, what it's about, and some of the people that you tell this story through.
Bloodsport is the story of Carlton Hasselrig, who is kind of exhibit A of the race norming scandal. So I'm assuming that your listeners have a working understanding of what race norming is. It's basically the presumption that Black players started with a lower cognitive aptitude, i.e. intelligence, than their white counterparts. And so therefore had to score at really low levels to qualify for money from the NFL concussion settlement. And Carlton was clearly a player who was suffering from massive cognitive impairment, all the sort of telltale symptoms of CTE, and was unable to get any money or compensation from the NFL. And so what we were able to do was basically say, okay, let's assume Carlton was white. And we took his neuropsych exam that his widow, Michelle, made available to us, and said, Eric Watson, who, you know, this independent neuropsychologist, what would Carlton's scores have been if he were white? If you took race, if you took the fact that his Blackness out of the equation, how would he have been scored? And it turns out that Carlton would have had a level of cognitive impairment that would have entitled him to up to $1 million. He was robbed of this money and his widow because he was Black. Now, the NFL a year ago said that they would no longer race norm players trying to qualify for money through the concussion settlement. And more importantly, they would go back and reevaluate all players who were race normed. To this day, David, a year later, 51 players have now qualified for a cash award out of the thousands that were race normed by the NFL. So this is sort of the classic NFL playbook of slow walking any kind of justice here for these guys. And Michelle has been basically left bankrupt by her husband's death. Michelle is Carlton's wife, and they depended on Carlton's pension from the NFL, which he earned after playing five seasons in the NFL. And that money that came in every year, every month, supported them, kept the roof over their head. When he died, those checks got cut off immediately. And so she has a small business that she's trying to run herself. She's trying to get off the ground. But basically, this woman has been left without her breadwinner and without the compensation that should have been paid to him for the neurocognitive impairment that ultimately led to his, you know, much too premature death.
Mm. What did you learn about this topic that you did not know going in?
So I've been doing this. I've been telling stories about retired NFL players for about 10 years. I did a series 10 years ago about a clinic in New Jersey that provided free medical services for retired NFL players who were like living in the grips of CTE, crippling orthopedic pain, addiction. What I had never seen before, David, that I saw in making this film is what CTE looks like firsthand, because Michelle, Carlton's widow, started documenting the last months of Carlton's life. And you see the disorientation, confusion, paranoia, rage, all of the sort of mood behavior, all of the things that people tell you are symptoms of CTE, she documented, and we were able to incorporate into this documentary. So I think one thing that this documentary does is show people what CTE looks like in the most sort of firsthand, intimate way that I've never seen before. And unfortunately, I consume a fair amount of the stories around brain injuries in the NFL. I've never quite seen what it looks like for these incredible women who are the caretakers for these men in the last days of their lives.
Mm. Were you ever a football fan, Isaac? Can you now watch the game?
It's more challenging. So I'm married to a Midwestern Catholic who's a huge Notre Dame fan. So there's a lot of college football in the house, but these guys, and that this is kind of a wildly underreported story as well, is the amount of CTE among college football players. So I watch football to the extent, David, that I'm an American. It's kind of been injected into my bloodstream. I get invited to parties to watch football. I get invited to Super Bowl parties. I find it more and more challenging. The moment that I sort of allow myself to just enjoy the incredible entertainment that football is, because it is an extraordinary package that the NFL has constructed. There will be something that I see that just makes me look away and say, you don't want to spoil everyone else's fun. And that's one of the challenges too, David. I don't know if you've had this issue too, in distributing your wonderful film, about the NFL. Is that this is people's escape.
Yeah.
Week in and week out. They do not want the cruel realities of what this sport entails to interfere in their enjoyment and their entertainment, because this is an escape from people's daily grind. So I do find it's difficult to rein on people's entertainment. But I also have seared in my mind and the memories of so many of these widows and women who are valiantly battling the NFL and these guys who still have what limited capacity they have to try to get the compensation they deserve. They become friends and they are very much seared into my brain. And so obviously that has really tempered my enjoyment of the game.
Yeah, I mean, if someone saw this film and walked away from it saying it is actually immoral to consume this product based upon what I've seen, would you feel like the film did its job?
I would. But David, I'm not going to tell. I'm not on a crusade to end football. I am on a crusade to make sure that there is justice for the men who play the game and whose sacrifices are made in the name of entertaining American audiences, I guess, and global audiences as well. There is, I think, an understanding at this point, and I'd love to jump to this too, David, at some point, what Ken Belson reported this week about the fact that they're very close to being able to diagnose CTE in living brains.
The Belson story is huge, and I'd love your thoughts about it, because I've always been of the opinion, and I'd love for you to say if you think I'm wrong, because I'm starting to think I'm wrong. I've always been of the opinion that would be a profound game changer. Like, if they can detect CTE in junior high kids who'd been doing the tots ball or whatever it's called.
Yep.
If they high school, college. Yep. Now you can't be drafted by the NFL because you have advanced CTE. I see it as being this huge game changer. Do you agree with that?
I totally agree. I think the moment that you can see CTE in Josh Allen's brain, in Patrick Mahomes' brain, more likely it's going to be the the guys on the line of scrimmage. But you know, Kenny Stabler. I mean, there are a number of quarterbacks who died with CTE, right? So the guys who are in your fantasy league, who now have to make a decision whether or not, or whether you're going to continue drafting them to play in your fantasy, on your fantasy team, knowing that these guys have CTE. I mean, once we're confronted with the reality that these guys have very grim futures, and you can see it, you can see the tau deposits on the brain, because we now have brain scans that can detect that in living brain tissue. I do think that's a game changer.
Yeah, agreed with you about that. You know, you're dealing with the issue of women who are providing support to men with CTE. Do you see any connective tissue between CTE and another issue that the NFL has dealt with or mishandled profoundly, and that's the issue of the intersection of football and violence against women?
Boy, that I can't speak on that, Dave.
I'll just say one thing about it. I found it very compelling. And I've interviewed a lot of these women also. And when they tell the stories about the eyes going blank and not being the same person that they were, those are very chilling. Of course, CTE is not, as we know, and I'm not suggesting this, you don't need CTE to be violent towards women, and you can have CTE and not be that way at all. So there's no one-to-one correlation. But when I hear about that, the blankness and the changes and acting out and the temper, it's hard not to feel like these things are at least some way connected.
Correlated. Yep. So in Bloodsport, you see it.
Yeah.
You see the rage. He is a shell of a man when you see it, but he's screaming at his wife. He's swinging violently. He's in this crazy manic fit. Dave, I know you've heard it from women who've been abused by guys who are former or current or former NFL players, that there is a switch that gets flipped, and who knows what precipitates it, but they are, their souls are stolen from them. They become, this disease is so effing cruel. Mm-hmm. Look, football's a violent sport. It's not crazy that there would be, you know, a higher correlation between football players and sort of abhorrent violence. But you factor in the brain damage and the lack, you know, the way in which CTE attacks the frontal lobe and impulse control and judgment and robs these men of their humanity. Because I've had that described to me, and I've seen it now, you know, with what Michelle filmed. These were, you know, incredible. You know, you'll hear these stories of these men who were just the most kind of loyal, family-oriented human beings, who suddenly become, you know, these impulsive gamblers, and they're suddenly taking up with, like, you know, teenagers, and like, and it's just, it's like these wives, like, I don't recognize, you hear this over and over again, Dave, I don't recognize him. I don't know who he is. I don't know what he became. This is just, you know, there's no disease quite like it, because it afflicts men at such a young age. You know, in reporting the story, I talked to the wives of men in their 30s. I talked to guys in their 30s who were battling this shit, you know? Philip Adams. How old was Philip Adams? By all accounts, the most mild-mannered guy. 32, 33 years old, whatever he is, suddenly becomes the psychopathic mass murderer who murders children. He was the father of a young child who apparently he was incredibly devoted to. And you know, Philip had advanced CTE when they did the autopsy. That is what this disease does. It absolutely transforms these men.
Wow. I mean, the I'll tell you, the film does justice to the struggles of these people.
Thank you.
And it really does. And that's not an easy thing to do by any stretch, given the enormity of the emotion that they have to shoulder. Your film really does match that. So how can people watch Bloodsport? And maybe you could say some of your partners in this project to give them.
Yeah, absolutely. So Al Jazeera, Inc., Al Jazeera is my partner. As you can imagine, it is really difficult, Dave, and I'm sure you encountered this as well, to find partners in the media world that are prepared to do a film that is hard hitting about the NFL, because everybody is in business with the NFL. Right? I mean, it is almost impossible to find a studio, media outlet, media company that is prepared to take on the NFL.
Absolutely.
But Al Jazeera does not have any contractual business with the NFL. And they were extraordinary partners. So I worked with a show called Fault Lines, which is their investigative documentary program about stories in the United States. And I worked with a wonderful correspondent named Josh Rushing. Josh is extraordinary. Brought what was great about working with Josh as well is that he is a kid who grew up playing football in Texas, and is still addicted to the game, and not afraid to admit it. And so one thing that we weren't able to include in the film was his kind of back and forth with people about the question you asked me, do you still watch? He asked the people we were interviewing, do you still watch? And watching them sort of trying to, you know, reconcile, because it is kind of amazing how people, knowing what they know, continue to consume the sport. Big shout outs to Al Jazeera for supporting this project. You can watch it on if you Google Bloodsport and Fault Lines, or Fault Lines Al Jazeera, you'll be able to watch it.
Yeah, and I gotta say, Fault Lines is an award laden industry on the media landscape. Does some of the best work out there. So that's amazing that you partnering with them. That's just fantastic.
Extremely fortunate.
It's great stuff. Now, Isaac, you've been a terrific guest. I mean, we can't talk about these issues enough, and I can't tell you how much I thought Bloodsport really just hit the bullseye. But something we always ask people when they are involved in projects like this is what kind of music they were listening to during the process.
Oh, my. Are you serious?
Oh, yeah. We ask every guest this.
I wish I had known this.
Oh, I know. It's better off the top of the head, though. So I'll just blather while you think for a second.
No, like, I know what it music. Is.
Oh, you're good already. Okay.
No, but tell me. No,
I was going to say it could be music that you listen to chill after work, music during, music while you were jogging in the morning, thinking about it, just whatever music got you jazzed.
Yeah, I'm a hip hop head, Dave. I mean, you know, even in my advanced age, but. I listened to Big Red Machine. Do you know who they are?
Heard of, have not heard.
So it's a collaboration with Bon Iver and the guy from The National. And it is incredibly melancholy, kind of soulful stuff. And this was heavy material that we were dealing with. So it was melancholy, reflective music, but I had never listened to them before. Interestingly, they just did a collaboration with Taylor Swift. So like suddenly, they have a bunch of, but Big Red Machine. Yeah.
Awesome. Well, we're going to check them out. I looked them up while you were talking. Aaron Dessner and Justin Vernon.
There you go.
And I love that they're named after the Cincinnati Reds teams of the 1970s.
Which I'm sure I'm surprised you remember, but I definitely remember.
Oh, I mean, I'm just like a baseball nut. So.
Fanatic. Okay.
So well, any decade, let's go there.
Yeah.
But yeah, Isaac Solitaroff, thank you so much, man. I appreciate you being on the pod. I hope you come back sometime.
Thanks, Dave. Really appreciate it, bro.
Cool. Be well. We'll be back after a quick word from the sponsor of this podcast, The Nation Magazine. We'll be back right after this, but first, a quick word from the sponsor of this podcast, The Nation Magazine. Okay, look, the need for independent journalism has never been more important, and The Nation brings it each and every week like they've been doing since 1865. I'm serious. This is what you gotta read. It's The Nation Magazine. Go to thenation.com/subscribe, and please never forget that when you support The Nation Magazine, you are also supporting the continued existence of this podcast. So please subscribe. Go to www.thenation.com/subscribe. And now, back to the Edge of Sports podcast. And now I've got some choice words. Okay, look, the Brooklyn Nets have decided that Kyrie Irving is, quote-unquote, not fit to associate with their team for 5 games because he posted a virulently anti-Jewish bigoted video called Hebrews to Negroes. Now, following Kyrie Irving's apology on Instagram, the team laid out a set of conditions for him to return that seemed designed to ensure that if he refuses, it could mean the end of his career. Now, I spoke last week about the politics of the film and, most importantly, the white supremacist forces celebrating Kyrie. But suffice it to say, just a quick word on that, seeing the film, which denies the Holocaust and claims that Jews worship Satan, atop Amazon's charts, has Nazi message boards in a tizzy of joy. It's like a giggling popularity contest between boosters of Elon, Tucker, Ye, and Kyrie. Now, whether Kyrie believes the mythologies presented in Hebrews to Negroes is one issue, but his inability to disavow his fascist cheering section is distressing. Even more disturbing is that neither the Nets nor the NBA have pressed him on this point in particular. Their silence on the broader political implications of the film's new popularity has created a dynamic where the Nets and the league seem primarily concerned with the hurt feelings of their Jewish fan base, not addressing the political climate of white supremacist rage, which is precisely what makes the film's ideas so dangerous. They will not address the climate because they would then have to address their own complicity in the creation of this climate. I know we all think of the NBA as this, you know, happy liberal fantasy land, but they are complicit in the state of this country's politics right now. And if they wanted to address that, they would have to address why they are fine with the DeVos family, which owns the Orlando Magic, bankrolling groups on the Christian right, including the work of the fascistic Blackwater founder, Eric Prince, whose sister, of course, was Betsy DeVos, or is Betsy DeVos, the education secretary under Trump. The NBA would have to address why 81% of the political money spent by franchise owners flowed to the GOP in 2020, not 2016, 2020, with several sending small fortunes directly to the bigot-in-chief himself, Donald Trump. Now, Trump has done more to whip up hatred against oppressed groups, including American-born Jews, than Kyrie could do in 1,000 lifetimes. Yet the league will provide home for a right-wing union-busting billionaire like the Trump-loving Tillman Fertitta of the Houston Rockets. Then there is the Nets billionaire owner Joseph Tsai, co-founder of the company Alibaba, which according to an ESPN report, financially supported the cultural genocide of Uyghur Muslims. Tsai insisted on meeting with Irving to educate him about the perils of anti-Semitism. And for some reason, Tsai is fit to associate with the Brooklyn Nets, just to be clear about that. But one of the things that Kyrie also has to do to get back in the league is ask forgiveness, basically, from the Anti-Defamation League. As if the Anti-Defamation League is the spokespeople for Jews writ large. I mean, the ADL, it's presented in the press as if it's the Jewish version of the NAACP, but it has its own history of attacks against black leaders and virulent anti-Palestinian bigotry, and attacks on Jews who take part in anti-racist struggle. Now, none of this is to give Kyrie a pass. I don't believe in whataboutism, where the sins of one are absolved by the sins of their enemies. But it is to point out that those standing in judgment of Kyrie Irving are some of the worst actors in our politics. And that's why I oppose the fines and suspensions against Kyrie. All they do is turn him into a martyr and make the film that much more attractive to the fascist curious. Adam Silver and the league have also now drawn a line that means NBA athletes, who've been encouraged over the last decade to speak their minds, must now watch what they say or face consequences for what they post. Many people are reading it to mean there is free speech for black athletes, but only as long as people in power can abide the beliefs being expressed. This is causing fans, tragically in my view, to equate Kyrie with the great athlete activists of decades past. He hasn't shown that courage or earned that distinction, but the more he is punished, the more people will think that shoe fits. Again, that's a tragedy, but it would be one of the NBA's making. So then what do you do? Look, the only way to fight against anti-Jewish bigotry is by linking it to broader fights against racism and oppression. And this won't happen by making Kyrie a martyr. The only way we can make those links is to both condemn this video while also condemning the anti-black racism of the response, not to mention the anti-black racism that constantly goes ignored. When Israeli ambassador to the United Nations, Gilad Erdan, expressed joy that Kyrie was, quote, put in his place, end quote, that is anti-black racism and it should be condemned. Look, Kanye West clearly has no interest, either financial or political, in a mass movement against all forms of oppression. Floyd Mayweather, another Kyrie supporter, is a serial abuser of women, not a fighter for anyone's liberation. Our ability to come together will mean saying that we are against anti-Semitism and all forms of racism, that if we condemn Kyrie's actions, we also condemn the actions of the hypocrites swirling around him. This might sound pie in the sky. Don't suspend Kyrie, but build a movement to confront all racist and bigoted ideas. But it's the best choice among the awful alternatives, and the only one that provides hope that we can emerge from this darkness. We'll be back right after this with a quick word from Edge of Sports. Hey, everybody out there. This is Dave Zirin with the Edge of Sports podcast. People got to know that we put this podcast on with elbow grease and bubble gum on a weekly basis. And we're proud of the work that we do. We love it, but we can't do it without support from you, the listener. So please go to patreon.com/edgeofsportspod and support the podcast. That's patreon.com/edgeofsportspod. Any little bit you might give to support the podcast actually makes a huge difference to the work we're trying to do. That's patreon.com/edgeofsportspod. We appreciate you. Make no mistake about it. And now, back to the Edge of Sports podcast. Now's the time for the part of the show that we call the Just Stand Up Awards, where we applaud players who just stand up and tisk tisk players who should just sit down. This is going to be an interesting one. The Just Stand Up Award this week goes to Jaylen Brown, a forward for the Boston Celtics. He's also the National Basketball Players Association vice president. And he recently called out the Brooklyn Nets owner, Joe Tsai, over the Kyrie Irving suspension. He was going after that thing that Tsai said that Irving, quote unquote, still has work to do. Brown called it alarming for multiple reasons. And then he said, our society has more work to do, including Joe Tsai. It's 2022. It takes 10 minutes of time to see who these business owners, corporations, etc., who they're associated with, and who they're doing business with, who they're affiliated with. And this really echoed what Jaylen Brown said when Phil Knight dumped Kyrie from Nike. And this is what he said. He said, since when does Nike care about ethics? Hilarious. I love it. I love that Jaylen Brown is calling out the hypocrisy of these corporate actors. What I don't like is why the Just Sit Down Award,
sit your ass down,
also goes to Jaylen Brown. Because I think he's doing absolutely the right thing as a union vice president and defending Kyrie from having to, you know, go through the labors of Hercules in order to get back onto the court. I think he's right to call out the ownership and institutional hypocrisy in the sports world. I think he also needs to condemn the anti-Jewish bigotry of that video. I think as someone who is heading up a union, which depends upon the most maximum unity possible, you need to be against all forms of oppression. And so you don't hear Jaylen Brown say things like, while that video does not represent the interests of our union to be united, it also can't be blown up to the point where Kyrie, you know, is basically in purgatory forever. I guess my point is that you can do both. You can do both. And I wish Jaylen Brown did. Well, that's all the time we have for this week's show. Thank you so much to our guest, Isaac Solitaroff. The flick is called Bloodsport. Go to YouTube, check it out. Al Jazeera English, it's unbelievable. Thank you to everybody who supports the show. Thank you to the producer of this podcast, David Tigaboo. For everybody out there listening, please stay frosty. We are out of here. Peace.
You know how to book flights and hotels. All you're missing is a tool to plan the travel experiences you'll have once you arrive. That's why you need Viator. Book guided tours, activities, excursions, and more in one place to make your trip truly unforgettable. Viator has over 300,000 travel experiences to choose from. Everything from simple tours to extreme adventures and all the niche, interesting stuff in between. So you can plan something that everyone you're traveling with will enjoy. Real traveler reviews give the inside scoop from people who've already been on the experiences you're considering, so you can plan with confidence. Free cancellation helps you plan for the unexpected, and 24/7 customer support means you can travel worry-free. Download the Viator app now and use code Viator10 for 10% off your first booking in the app. Find travel experiences for you. Do more with Viator.
For the ones who work hard to ensure their crew can always go the extra mile, and the ones who get in early so everyone can go home on time, there's Grainger, offering professional-grade supplies backed by product experts so you can quickly and easily find what you need. Plus, you can count on access to a committed team ready to go the extra mile for you. Call, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.